WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228 EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Christopher Cruz. Are striking entertainment writers in the studios making progress in their efforts to end a months-long strike? KCAL TV reporter Tom Waite says maybe.
The joint statement only said the WGA, which is the Writers Guild, and the AMPTP, that's the Alliance of Studios, met for a bargaining today and will meet again tomorrow. That is so significant because they have not released a joint statement in months, if at all. So for them to go forward with just these few words to agree on something is a very tiny step forward, but is definitely some progress.
The Biden administration is offering hundreds of thousands of Venezuelan migrants legal status. More on that from CBS's Allison Keyes.
More than 400,000 Venezuelan migrants will have a chance for both legal status and work permits, giving them the ability to live and work in the nation legally. In recent years, more than 7 million have fled authoritarian rule and economic woes, creating the largest refugee crisis ever recorded in the Western Hemisphere.
Sheriff's deputies in Tennessee have been charged in the death of a black man who was beaten last October at the county jail in Memphis. WREG-TV reporter Bria Jones with more.
Sheriff Bonner did announce that 9 Shelby County deputies have been indicted over the death of Gershon Freeman. Now, right now, those deputies have not been identified. We're told that an indictment will be sealed at least until Monday. That's according to the attorneys of Freeman.
Freeman had a psychotic episode before deputies allegedly punched him, kicked him, and kneeled on his back. The focus was on climate at the UN General Assembly Wednesday, says CBS's Michael George.
The Secretary General of the United Nations pressed leaders to change course now.
We can still limit the rise in global temperature to 1.5 degrees.
Only leaders who came with concrete action plans to address the climate crisis were given the opportunity to speak. Missing from the podium at the climate meeting, the presidents of the United States and China.
12 years after the repeal of its Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, the Pentagon is still trying to restore full benefits to LGBTQ veterans who were forced out of the military under that policy. CBS's Jim Axelrod.
These are people, and by our count, maybe tens of thousands, who have suffered. They have suffered an injustice. They have been denied benefits they earned by serving this country for no reason other than their sexuality.
The annual Annenberg Constitution Day Civic Survey has found that many of those asked can't name the three branches of the federal government. About 2/3 can, but 10% can only list 2, 7% name 1, 17% can't name a single branch. For the record, executive, legislative, judicial. This is CBS News.
When you think of hiring, think of Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/cranberry juice,
cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number 2 ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network. Red Delicious, Honey Crisp, Granny Smith. If you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick it straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media, I'm Terry.
The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens.
Today, I am talking to the owner of Funky Fresh Spring Rolls, my friend, Truman McGee.
From an environmentally friendly perspective, the fact that it's frozen means that it's not going to waste.
I am a serial strawberry abuser. If you're a fruit and you're watching this, stay away from me, okay? Do not jump in my shopping cart, because I will let you die.
Cripes Cast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Aaron comes in every day looking like he just stepped out of a Turkish bathhouse because it's so hot in there. Just to recap, so far the segment has been filled with dog vomit, old men peeing, and Aaron wearing a dish towel. So we're...
Hey man, your name's on the show. Your name's on the show.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Weekday mornings 6 till 8.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Take About Tuesday edition. Then we got a fine guest joining us very, very shortly. John Nichols from the Cap Times here locally from the nation. You know him. You love him. He was texting me. He's like, where's the producer's call? And I had to admit to you in the audience, I was locked out of the building there for a minute. And I had not yet shared John's favored means of communication, cell phone.
Rookie, come on, man.
I had the card, it turned green, but it wouldn't. We have the card keys here at work. I took the wrong one outside. I was just stretching my legs, you know, on top of the hour, getting a little air, and then I had to run around the block here to get back in the building.
Most exercise you got all week, Rudy.
I'm getting my steps. 844-967-2789. No, we're getting to John Nichols, so... Don't call us. John, we'll call you. Sorry, dude. I got myself locked out for a minute. We're back on the radio now, though.
Hey, John.
Sounds like live radio to me.
Indeed it is.
I got back in the building before the 5:06, whatever time it is now, John.
You don't
I got
even
in.
Know what time it is.
I know it's time to talk to John Nichols on the radio. And before we get into the headlines, John, let's talk about the big Cap Times Idea Fest going on this week. It's in motion. Yeah. It's happening. John, what can you tell us about it?
Well, it's the biggest by far that we've had so far, which is kind of cool. I guess you're supposed to go from strength to strength. And this year, as I think probably most people know, we've got Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison, the guy who prosecuted George Floyd's murderer. He's going to be on tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at Shannon Hall on the UW campus. And Thursday night, Judy Woodruff is in town, the longtime PBS anchor. And on Friday night, we have Senator Bernie Sanders at 7 p.m. at Shannon Hall. And that looks to be probably the biggest Idea Fest event we'll ever do. Or at least the biggest one we've done so far. I shouldn't lower our expectations.
John, here's the problem. You need a bigger venue. Bernie sold him out, running opposite a Badger game and a Brewers game on Friday night. Bernie Sanders is already sold out, John. We're dangling the carrot, but we can't let our audience eat.
Well, come to Ellison on Wednesday night. That will be great as well. Keith Ellison was Bernie Sanders' co-chair in 2016 and 2020, but also he's former head of the Congressional Progressive Caucus and really one of the great leaders on economic and social and racial justice in this country. So I wish that everybody could come see Bernie, but if you can't, come to Keith. It'll be much appreciated. And as for Bernie Sanders, I can tell you that, when we talked about this event, he said to me, there's not a Badger game that night, is there? And I said, well, there is. And he said, well, how do you think we'll do? And I said, I think you'll do okay. And so I'm very pleased that Madison has proven me right.
John Nichols from the Cap Times, the Cap Times Idea Fest going on each day this week, my understanding. John, Saturday, also a big event. Tell people what's going on Saturday and who's the big former Republican headliner Saturday night.
Well, he is indeed. Saturday's a big day in general. We have Jonathan Eich, who's got the great new biography of Martin Luther King Jr. out. And we have Francesca Hong and Christina Shelton, two great state legislators who are talking about, what might happen if the Democrats ever retake the legislature, which should be great. But Saturday night at 7 p.m., we have former Congressman Adam Kinzinger, one of the two Republicans who sat on the January 6th committee, and also one of the rare Republicans who voted to impeach Donald Trump, a guy who really has, I think, gained an international reputation as someone who was courageous enough to stand up to his own party on behalf of basic democratic principles in the United States. So I think Kinzinger should be a pretty good event as well.
John, now that we've promoted most of the headliners, let me ask you.
Yes,
you've known
indeed.
Bernie Sanders for a long time. When you get together with Bernie, night, day, morning, do you offer the man a beer? What? How do you greet Bernie Sanders? Do you offer him some pea soup like Fred used to have each day at the Broca? What's the regular for Bernie Sanders?
Bernie Sanders is a very easygoing guy. He eats what everybody else eats and drinks what everybody else drinks. He usually has a coffee every day. What we do is we walk a lot. The two of us both of us like to walk. And so when we're together, whether it's in Burlington or even when we've been on the book tour, we tend to, go for a walk, which can be amusing at times because I'll give you an example that back in March, we were down in Tucson, Arizona before the big Tucson Book Festival. And we had a huge event that day, but we had an hour before. So we took a walk through the neighborhoods of Tucson and we were walking by people who were like, tending their flowers and stuff. And people would look up and they're like, do a double take. And they say, you're Bernie Sanders. And he is sort of a universally recognized figure. And I can tell you that when we go walking around, people do often recognize him.
You know what?
One out of 1,000 recognizes me.
When I go out with Dominic, it's like being in the presence of a rock star. Must be like that with Bernie.
Absolutely. Yeah, right. Very much like it is like that. Do you know the other thing that's really interesting is everyone wants a selfie with Bernie Sanders. It's a very interesting dynamic that everybody wants a selfie, and he's remarkably patient with it. He'll give anybody a second to get it together. And there are thousands, millions of people, I guess, by now who have selfies, who have run into him when he's walking. Because, again, the thing to understand about Bernie Sanders is he is not some elite guy. He drives like a 15-year-old car. He lives in a very normal house. He is what he presents. He is, somebody who came from a working class background. He's done very well, obviously a senator and stuff like that, but he still remains very in tune with grassroots folks.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. John Nichols from The Nation magazine, Cap Times here in Wisconsin. John, also Bernie Sanders and us, Friends of Labor, UAW on a strike right now, some targeted strikes, but they're threatening to, increase the pressure, perhaps expand the strikes. I want to get your sense, John. Obviously, this has been brewing for some time. The UAW, the unions, they gave up a lot in order to keep the automotive industry alive for a long time, and they're looking for theirs now. John, how are you seeing this play out?
Well, you just put it in very good perspective, and that's the way to explain it. Back in 2008, 2009, when George Bush and Dick Cheney and their buddies on Wall Street crashed the global economy, and they did, they crashed the global economy. Obviously, that did tremendous damage to the U.S. auto industry. And the auto industry at that point was on the ropes. There was real concern that one or more of the companies could have gone bankrupt. Real concern about, you know, failure of the industry in general. The auto workers sacrificed their cost of living increases, a lot of their benefits. They accepted multi-tier wage programs, which meant that younger workers who came in didn't get paid as much as older workers for doing the same work. They gave up an immensity, and they knew it was a tremendous sacrifice, but they did it because they wanted to save the industry. The interesting thing was that they assumed, of course, that they would get, you know, some recognition for that, that they would be made whole. But we're now, you know, 14, 15 years later, and they haven't been made whole. The Economic Policy Institute tells us that the average auto worker makes less today than they made in real dollars, obviously with inflation, that than they made back in 2008, 2009. More significantly, the industry has been incredibly profitable. The industry in the last 10 years has made over $250 billion. I'm going to emphasize that. The big three took in more profit. This is profit. More than $250 billion. Just this year, they're anticipated to make around $33 to $35 billion just this year. And this is the industry that's saying, oh, we can't give these workers a significant pay increase. We can't, you know, get rid of the multi-tiered wage structures. We can't restore cost of living. It's just a lie, frankly. They have more money than they know what to do with. They're literally doing stock buybacks, and they are not negotiating in good faith. So the union had to walk. They've done it in a very smart, structured way. They took two or three major plants out, including the Jeep plant in Toledo, which is obviously one of their critical factories because the Jeep is a very popular vehicle. And if the companies do not negotiate in good faith, they will take more people out. This is a very popular strike. It is popular with the workers. There's all evidence that they're incredibly supportive of it. It's also popular with the American people. There's a poll out that shows 75% of Americans, again, emphasizing that number, 75% of Americans support the UAW rather than the companies.
John Nichols, our fine guest. John, about a minute left in this segment. We were just in Chippewa Falls the other day, Dom and I doing a show. And
Leinenkugel's.
Yeah, the brewery went through a strike, and it's not a locally owned, family-owned brewery anymore. It's an international conglomerate. But the people of Chippewa Falls supported the workers, John. Something of a union labor renaissance. John, what can you tell us about the example of Leinies?
Well, you're nailing it, brother, because what you saw in you know, like a smaller perspective just there in Chippewa Falls is really part of a national story, and that is that polling shows us unions are more popular than they've been at pretty much any time in history. You know, literally something in the range of 75% of Americans are supportive of unions. And so this is a time when unions can and should be making big demands. And that's obviously what the UAW is doing. That's what the Leinenkugel workers did. And the Leinenkugel workers got their contract. I believe the UAW workers will get their contract as well.
John Nichols, if you could please stick around, sir. Want to ask you about some of the local issues, perhaps the pending impeachment of Janet Protasiewicz, the attempt to remove the Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf, and, you know, the overturning of the 400-year legislative piece by Tony Evers. That made me a little sad. John, come back with us. Then I'll be happy. The happier happy hour. Devil's Advocates, John Nichols and you. Stick around, please. Down. Oh, back
down. The simple click of a seatbelt can mean the difference between life and death. But don't just take it from me.
As a nurse for the last 34 years, I've seen way too many people seriously hurt in crashes because they weren't wearing a seatbelt. Please protect yourself. Spare your family and emergency responders from needless trauma. Buckle up. Every seat, every trip, every time.
A life-saving message, sponsored by the U.S. and Wisconsin DOTs.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly clear, 59 degrees in the overnight with light southeast winds. Thursday, all kinds of sunshine, 82 expected in the afternoon. Will be dry during the day. By Friday, though, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, especially in the late day. Partly sunny at 77. It's 66 at our studios.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
The big and tall of political talk, the Devil's Advocates.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Our guest, James Santel, sticking around for one more segment. Jim, appreciate you doing so. Before we move on to some of the other travails and trials of Donald Trump, the classified documents case is a personal assistant who has now apparently returned some documents over to Jack Smith. And my understanding, based on the reporting, Jim, is that Donald Trump would put like to-do lists and you write them on these classified documents and give them to her. So a couple of questions I have. Is that in and of itself a problem, writing on these classified documents? And then, of course, she apparently turned them over. So these are more documents that were not initially turned over by Trump and his team. Your thoughts, counselor?
Yes, yes, and yes. Again, it gets even more complicated, right? You shouldn't be writing on classified documents. Again, it doesn't necessarily destroy the integrity of them, but it goes more largely to this issue about handling them generally. When I was in Iraq, where we had a lot of that, when I was U.S. attorney from time to time, we had classified documents. You read them. The whole idea is you read them. You put them in your head, if you will. You don't disclose them. And even if you make more records of them, more notes, whether it's on the documents, other things, now you've created another document that can also be subject to classification because you're using the information from the classified document. So it's not good. And it just underscores, again, the craziness with which our former president was handling all these documents. Secondarily, again, she turns these over now to Jack Smith and says, this is what I know about them. These are the annotations he made. And depending upon how those exactly look and what additional background that she can provide about them, again, indicates that you've got not only more evidence there, but you do wonder aloud what else is out there, which I think is the principal focus of your question, right, Dom? If she is still producing these things, we know that in order to go in and get a search warrant, you have to have probable cause to believe there's a crime being committed in that location. We've talked a lot about Bedminster as opposed to just Mar-a-Lago. What about the Trump Tower? Well, presumably there would have been a search warrant if you had probable cause. But this underscores once again that you got to have somebody coming forward and saying, yes, this is where they are. I got them. And it may well indicate that Donald Trump has still got items out there. And that is hugely troubling in addition to the substance of this assistant's testimony.
All right, Jim, the civil trial, Letitia James, New York State Attorney General, State Appeals Court apparently put something on put it on pause. This is the kind of delays and things that we know were going to come up. What's going on there right now, Jim, to your understanding?
Sure. So the judge who's presiding over this case, his name is Judge Engoron, has said, I think his expression was over hell or high water. We are not delaying this trial. He set it for October 2nd, which is also the first day of the Supreme Court getting together. So an important day in our history coming up soon. He is committed to it. It remains on his calendar. What happened, of course, is that Donald Trump and his attorneys came forward with this continuing motion and said, you know what, because of the age of some of this, again, most of this happens before he's the president, because of some what we'd call statute of limitations issues, even under New York law, that their position is that these are not prosecutable offenses, or at least some of them aren't. And so what's happened is an appeals court judge looked at this and said, okay, we'll take a look at this, determine whether or not there's some there and get back to you, and establish a quick briefing schedule on this. It's not entirely clear that the October 2nd date there will go away. That one's been established by, again, the trial court judge for a long period of time. I think he's going to try to impanel a jury on that morning. But again, the appeals court moving quickly on this because I think they know they need to get an answer here. The appeals court plainly comes back and says, you know what, these charges are too late, they're too old. Then summer, all this goes away. I think that would be a stunning result. Unlikely that Letitia James would file something that would be untimely. But we need to go through this process. So down the road, again, we've got this sense that Donald Trump has been given all the options he's been given to ensure that his defense is adequate and aggressive, which it should
be. Jim, the court indicated they'll make a decision next week of September 25th. If it goes against Trump, could he then appeal that?
He could. He could go again to the, you got a higher level code. The New York Supreme Court could do that, whether or not they take the case. I mean, at some point, too, this has got to be finalized as well. And at some point, judges can also say, you know, we are not ruling in favor of you, Mr. Former President, nor are we staying the trial pending things that you do. The question whether a court stays its own decision while other things go on, that's always an important issue. If, in fact, the judge, the appeals court, the panel says there's no there, the case can go ahead, unlikely that they would further stay this again because it's been on the court's calendar for a while. And Judge Engoron wants to go ahead with this, and as does Letitia James.
Jim Santel, just a few more minutes with us. A couple of questions left for you, though, sir. Looking closer to home, Megan Wolf, the Wisconsin Elections Commission administrator, was voted to have been stripped from her position, but she's still showing up for work. In my understanding, there is a lawsuit. There's also the threat of impeachment against Janet Protasiewicz. Any opinions on either of these cases that'll probably end up in the courts, I suspect, Jim?
Right. All of them, again, how sad it is here in the state of Wisconsin, as we are in the United States of America, that we're doing all of this strategy stuff that is not intended to get to the big issues of our time, education, healthcare, immigration, all the other things that are important, violence, guns, those kinds of things. But instead, we're talking about impeaching a Supreme Court justice who was sworn in on October 1st. High crimes and misdemeanors. She hasn't yet decided a case. Is this a situation where an impeachment articles should be returned by the assembly? Can they do it? Yes. Should they do it? No. Not a premise for doing that at all. We'll see what they do if they unwisely go down this road. Again, this may be a second abortion issue for the Republicans in the state of Wisconsin. Didn't go well for them the first time around. At some point, people get tired of that kind of behavior and that kind of machinations that are not intended to move forward. Second, you've got Megan Wolf, as you said, lots of issues there about being able to stay on. There wasn't an official renomination of her, and so it's now back in the courts. Meanwhile, she's at work ensuring that the Wisconsin Election Commission can make decisions. We got to get that one resolved, too, because what's happening in 2024? That's right. There are at least three elections going on. We got to be addressing those as well.
Jim Santel, our fine guest, former U.S. attorney. He is the host of the Morning Cannolis right here on the Civic Media Network. Tune in for Jim 9 to 11 on Saturday mornings. Any final thoughts, counselor? I'll give you like 30.
It's always good to be with you. A time of when we're all, as we often do in these afternoon discussions, a time of civics understanding for America, right? It's a crash course in law school, which we enjoy conveying to your listeners, but also a time when to understand what's going on, you really do have to spend some time digging into it. That's exactly what you do. Congratulations on that mission. It's a good
Thank
one.
Thank you for your help, Jim.
Jim, I'm just here for the cannolis. Come back. More Devil's Advocates.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
CBS News Brief, possible progress in ending the entertainment writer strike, says KCAL-TV reporter Tom Waite in Los Angeles.
There is some optimism in the room there, but
these things can get derailed very quickly. So we really don't know where this will all land.
Migrant crossings at the southern border are rising again, affecting those who care for them, including John Martin at the Opportunity Center for the Homeless in El Paso, Texas.
We're seeing longer stays. We're seeing those numbers increase. And yes, we have reached to a point of crisis as a result.
Nine sheriff's deputies have been indicted in the beating death of a black man at the county jail in Memphis, Tennessee last October. WREG-TV reporter Bria Jones says the sheriff, who's running for mayor of Memphis, believes politics is at play.
He says that he believes that this is political prosecution. He says that this is all a political stat. We do know that the case was handed over from the Shelby County District Attorney over to Nashville.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
Two kinds of politicians, those who want to be and those who want to do. Tommy Thompson, John McCain, I would put Tony Evers in this category. They're guys who are running because there were things that they wanted to do.
The Todd Alba Show.
Now contrast that to Hillary Clinton, I would argue, or Donald Trump. Sure, there are things they want to do, but ultimately, they are like Scott Walker. They were people who want to be.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates may not agree on much, but funny is funny.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Wednesday happier happy hour. Always happy when Jim Santel comes round. Thank you, sir. The fine counselor does a fine radio show Saturday mornings right here on the Civic Media, 9 to 11 a.m., the morning cannolis. And he's good company. So we like Jim. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, around, Jim's a good cat. Tune in. You'll learn a lot.
You can be like Jim and join the greatest radio show ever just by dialing 844-967-2789. Dom, Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States, and Nate's been working hard during the break, actually pulling up some fresh sound so we can share it with you, our audience. But I'd point out, one Republican, one lone Republican, actually came away very supportive of the Attorney General today. Ken Buck, You followed the facts. Far-right lawmaker breaks with party and sides with Garland. He must be retiring, Dom.
Right. He's stepping down soon.
Rep. Kinbuck, Republican from Colorado, a member of the Hardline Freedom Caucus, stood up against the GOP attacks on Merrick Garland in a hearing on Wednesday. There's the truth, Dom. Buck is, you know, considering a job in media, apparently.
Yeah. That's they why all grow a spine when they're getting ready to walk out the door.
Buck, who has reportedly been pondering leaving Congress for a job at the CNN, has recently made waves among fellow Republicans for bucking them when it comes to an impeachment inquiry into the president. Now, while fellow Republicans were lashing out at Garland, Buck chose a different route. He praised Garland's past and his independence. During the hearing, Buck noted that Garland led the prosecution of the Oklahoma City bombing case, you know, the Timothy McVeigh, and he had imposed the death penalty there. The lawmaker also said that he was not exactly a Democrat priority. You did so because of the rule of law. You did so because of the facts and the law and did so. And you followed the facts and the law in that situation. Well, that's kind of like high praise from a Republican acknowledging the successful prosecution of the Oklahoma City bomber. That's not the Unabomber. But to acknowledge anything good any Democrat ever did ever, or the Attorney General, I'm not even sure that Merrick Garland is a Democrat. Appointed
well,
by
he's trying to he's fluffing up the resume for the CNN job, man. You know, I don't want to be a total hack on CNN. It's still somewhat of a hack.
So they only play hackery for political gain, but when the truth comes out, then you know, then they got to soften it up so they can go get a job in the real world.
Well, Michael, you put your finger right on it, and they'd have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for those meddling kids.
844-967-2789. Let's go to the rundown. Nate, working hard. We've got the Attorney General of the United States. He starts with a question. Defunding the FBI? Are you crazy, man?
It's mega's all about defunding the police. Wow. Wow, that BLM stuff certainly must have rubbed off on him.
Play cut one.
I cannot imagine the consequences of defunding the FBI, but they would be catastrophic.
let's just say it'd be catastrophic. And I don't think that's being hyperbolic. A little more from the Attorney General. Cut two, Nate.
This country took her in.
His grandmother.
And under the protection of our laws, she was able to live without fear of persecution. That protection is what distinguishes this country from so many others.
And Garland feels like he's repaying a debt. Cut three.
The protection of law, the rule of law, is the foundation of our system of government. Repaying this country for the debt my family owes, for our very lives, has been the focus of my entire professional career.
More from the Attorney General seems downright emotional there, giving his testimony. Before a House committee earlier today, they were there to grill his ass. Equal laws applied. Cut number four, please. Merrick Garland.
We apply the same laws to everyone. There is not one set of laws for the powerful and another for the powerless, one for the rich and another for the poor, one for Democrats and another for Republicans, or different rules depending upon one's race or ethnicity or religion.
You know, I don't think it's so partisan as favoring of the rich. You got good legal counsel.
Your
lawyer costs $500 an hour.
Yeah.
You're probably going to at least have the chance to plead it down. Just ask Hunter.
Yeah, but also ask Giuliani. You know what I mean? Maybe, maybe not.
Garland says he will not back down. Let's play the Attorney General. Cut five, please.
We will not be intimidated. We will do our jobs free from outside influence, and we will not back down from defending our democracy.
And the public servant. The public servants, Jim Santel, talked about the Republicans, the House members, were attacking the bureaucrats, naming names, effectively, what, voxing them, trying to put them out there for scorn, ridicule, or violence? That's kind of the game they play so often, Dom. Here is what the attorney general thought about the practice of Republicans singling out public servants. Cut six, please.
All of us recognize that with this work comes public scrutiny, criticism, and legitimate oversight. These are appropriate and important given the matters and the gravity of the matters that are before the department. But singling out individual career public servants who are just doing their jobs is dangerous.
Do you think he's talking to Wisconsin Republicans in their pursuit of Megan Wolf?
There's so many examples that could relate to, man. It's hard to say.
Couple more from the Attorney General of the United States. He, of course, a Joe Biden appointee, and he claims they're following the facts. Cut seven, please.
I am not the president's lawyer. I will add, I am not Congress's prosecutor. The Justice Department works for the American people. Our job is to follow the facts and the law, and that is what we do.
Anybody tell Bill Barr that? Because I thought mostly he was spinning the Mueller report and doing lots of redactions.
Well, you can understand why the Republicans would think in such a manner, considering how Bill Barr served Donald Trump.
And yeah, Jeff Sessions.
Yeah, you're right, man. And the other, you know, the bald guy. I don't even know who else came in and out of that position. But, you know, that's how Trump
Acting
did it.
Isn't Attorney General. It? Wasn't it Matt Clark there for a minute, Tom?
Jeff Clark?
Jeff. Or like a, no, not Jeffrey yeah, Clark. Tried. No.
He tried, man.
He was willing to step into the breach, Dom.
Yes.
And
yes.
serve the nation through corruption of the electoral process and the peaceful transfer.
And screw the nation. Yes, that's exactly what he wanted to do.
You more say potato, I say potato.
AG Garland, last cut on the Hill today. Cut eight, please.
Our job is not to take orders from the president, from Congress, or from anyone else about who or what to criminally investigate.
Boom.
Here's another headline, Dom. This one from the Raw Story, one of my favorite sources. Badgering the witness. Chaos erupts as Matt Gaetz tries to steamroll Merrick Garland on the January 6th. David Edwards reporting, Rep. Matt Gaetz was accused of badgering U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland on Wednesday after he refused to allow answers to his questions. In a House Judiciary Committee hearing, Gaetz peppered Garland with questions about Biden family ties to China. But when Garland tried to answer, Gaetz interrupted and asked about January 6th. Yeah. So did the FBI lose count of the number of paid informants on January 6th? Gaetz wondered. Let me answer your question about China, Garland replied. I want you to answer this question, Gaetz demanded. I only get 5 minutes. You've already sort of, I think, screwed the pooch on China. So January 6th, did you lose count of the number of federal assets? Gentlemen, as time has expired, Rep. Jerry Nadler pointed out. So he's trying to jam a couple more in. You know how it is when you're up against the heartbreak, Dom. Chairman Jim Jordan gave Garland a chance to respond. China is the most aggressive, most dangerous adversary the United States faces. Is he aware of this Republican Party? But I read on. And we are doing everything within our power to rebut that, to stop that, to prevent their invasions, both kinetic, both through cyberspace, the Attorney General stated. And we will continue to do that. If someone gave that answer in your courtroom, when you were a judge, you would tell them they're being non-responsive and you would direct them to answer the question, Gaetz bellowed. At that point, members of the committee erupted, pointing out that Gaetz had no more time. One member accused Gaetz of badgering the witness. They say that like being a badger is a bad thing. Before his time expired, the attorney general did not respond to the gentleman's question, Jordan said. I was hoping he would respond to the question about the confidential human sources on January 6th. He didn't respond to that. I'm sure we're going to get an answer to that later.
Sure. Yeah. Digging into it, flipping over all the stones, finding the facts.
Maybe if they just asked three times, Tom.
Yes.
Who are the confidential informants? Who are the confidential informants? Who are the confidential informants?
There's Dr. Evil's secret lair.
Would it be appropriate for the attorney general to disclose who the confidential informants to the January 6th were? I mean, Gaetz is a lawyer. No. I'm not sure what Jim Jordan is. Perhaps did he go to law school? He might have. Never met a sport Cody like, though.
So January 6th, did you lose count of the number of federal assets? I mean, okay, that's the question, and Garland did not answer it.
Well, the implication is there was federal assets in the crowd, right?
Yes.
Planted federals. This is the deep state theory that it was a federal action, that this is a setup. It wasn't really the Trumpsters. Why, it was paid FBI informants. You know, all this violence. You know that this is a conspiracy theory that's been...
No, I understand that part of it, but if that's where you're going down, this question maybe doesn't get there. Did you lose count of the number of federal assets? No. Next question. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know, man. These Republicans, it's a little out of hand. It's a little embarrassing. But, Crudy, you mentioned it. Let's throw it out there, man. Jim Jordan not wearing the jacket. You seem very bothered by that. Now, as a guy who went to a private Catholic high school, I got to tell you, I'm not a real fan of the uniform, man, of the dress code, as it were. And you got a problem with the jacket. You got a problem with Fetterman wearing a hoodie?
A little bit.
Why?
On the floor of the House, on the floor of the Senate, I would.
Okay, why? Why?
Because, you know, it's a dress code. It's a distinguished body. It's supposed to be our best in
rights. Wait, hang on. We just played some sound. Right?
Is Fetterman supposed to show up in some Daisy Dukes and a tank top?
Republicans, are they distinguished to you, Crudy? Is that just these? Jim Jordan, right? Matt Gaetz wears a jacket. How about that?
I respect the chamber, if not those serving on the Republican side of the chamber.
And what is it about wearing a suit coat makes you respect a chamber, a room? Which is weird. How do you respect but whatever. What is wearing a suit coat? How does that make your respect shown?
Jim Jordan just has a habit of being sort of a tool of his party, a tool, any means justify the ends. Obviously, he helped to hide the sexual assaults when he was a coach at Ohio State University.
And what does that have to do with his jacket?
I don't know why the hell you're asking me why it's a big
because
deal.
Because you're the one making an exception.
And when I try to make a point, you do a Jim Jordan to me and interrupt my freaking train of thought.
Please continue. I'm sure you're going to come to some conclusion where any of those things have anything to do with what the guy wears.
Okay. He's a schmuck like you're being right now with or without a sport coat.
You're going to go somewhere, man. Please continue.
We're going to break at this time. I had a thought. You interrupted the thought.
It matters.
Why does it matter to you to harangue me about this point?
Well, you keep bringing up dress codes, man. You seem to have a problem with it. I'm trying to get to the bottom of it.
Says the man who wears flip-flops to church if he went to church. Well, I mean, just because you don't honor...
So you got a problem with me wearing flip-flops, Crudy?
Occasionally.
I'm not a respectable guy. I don't respect... You know, democracy because I wear flip-flops?
There are times where dress codes are appropriate.
When? Why?
Because decorum, fella.
Yeah.
You've never been to a place. Have you ever been to a guy's wedding? Do you show up in cutoffs and flip-flops or maybe put on a sport coat? Could you make the effort?
I've been
the guy's a committee chairman.
I've been to many beach weddings.
Grilling the Attorney General of the United States. He can't even put on his sport coat, as is the custom and the dress code in the House.
I really miss the white wigs. Folks, we're the Devil's Advocates, 844-967-2789. Come back. We'll light Crudy's ass up a little bit more.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio each month for news, weather, and emergency information.
A new bill in Congress would make sure AM radio remains in cars. Because when cell and internet services are down, this free service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly clear, 59 degrees in the overnight with light southeast winds. Thursday, all kinds of sunshine, 82 expected in the afternoon. Will be dry during the day. By Friday, though, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, especially in the late day. Partly sunny at 77. Right now, it's 64.
Civic Media Radio Stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, our last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now, 844-967-2789. Curdy, let me throw this out there, this whole dress code thing. The Hill reporting, a Democratic senator on the new dress code, he doesn't like it. Senator Mark Kelly, he agrees with you, Crudy. He's joined some of his congressional colleagues in criticizing the Senate's new informal dress code. I don't like it, Kelly said when asked by CNN anchor Jake Tapper about the updated dress code. I think it would have been better if we had a discussion about it ahead of time. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announced over the weekend that the Senate will ease up on the chamber's informal dress code, permitting senators to wear whatever they want on the floor. This means lawmakers will no longer have to poke only their head in or arm in the chamber to vote if wearing shorts or gym clothes. The change was met with some criticism from both sides of the aisle, with some pointing the finger at Senator John Fetterman, who is often spotted on Capitol Hill wearing shorts and hoodies instead of suits. Fetterman denied he was a driving force behind the change in the rules. Speaking to Kelly, Tapper appeared to mock the changes, asking the lawmaker, quote, I wonder what you thought of Schumer changing the Senate dress code. It will accommodate what can perhaps best be called the broski takes on garbage to the curb on Sundays, outfits that Senator Fetterman and my beloved Commonwealth of Pennsylvania favors. A group of 46 Senate Republicans sent a letter to Schumer Tuesday asking him to reverse the decision, arguing the Senate floor is a place of honor and tradition. Kelly is not the only Dem who has pushed back against the change. Manchin also had an issue with it. So, okay, so you're not, I mean, Jim Jordan not wearing the suit coat and Fetterman with the hoodies and all that.
I have much greater issues with Jim Jordan than his wardrobe. The fact that I used to that because I can't lay out the rape allegations that he covered up at Ohio State University, the athletes that he begged not to go public with this information and then denied any prior knowledge. Unfortunately, that's cumbersome to attack him with each and every time I reference Jim Jordan. So I occasionally reference the sport coat, but please do go on.
So you take issue with it. I mean, so what about Marjorie Taylor Greene?
I take issue with a lot of things that Jim Jordan has done.
Okay. Well, we're not talking about Jim Jordan. We're talking about dress codes. Because, and your reference to him, because you probably criticize him. It's easy to criticize a guy not wearing a jacket in your opinion. And my point is that doesn't matter. None of it matters, Crudy. I mean, do you have a problem with the women stop wearing dresses and the pantyhose and sleeveless shirts? Is that a problem too?
How about put on a freaking sport coat when it's appropriate to wear a sport coat? When people set a dress code, I get it, man. You got long hair and you wear black t-shirts all the time and flip flops. You don't honor dress codes. You're outside of dress codes.
How do you honor a dress code, man?
You wear the clothes appropriate for the setting you're in, like a formal setting. Let's say a workplace like the U.S. Senate. You don't wear a freaking hoodie and shorts.
Why? Because Crudy says so. You know, back in the day, Crudy, not so long ago, women couldn't show their arms there. You got a problem with that,
too? Yeah, and once upon a time, women couldn't vote either, right, Don, okay, but that's so, not no, what we're talking about.
Dress code. It's exactly what we're talking about. It was not very long ago that women had to cover their shoulders in Congress, Crudy.
It was not so long ago.
I want to know, is that too much for you? Was that a bit too far? Oh my God. Next thing you know, they're gonna show their calves. Next thing you know, they're gonna be wearing, you know, they'll be see their shoulders. Goodness gracious. How can we get anything done in the proper and formal Congress that has like a 12% approval rating? You gotta be kidding me, man. 844-967-2789. William, you're up from Berlin.
Hello.
Berlin. Welcome, William. What do you got for us?
Yes. I hate to hear you guys argue. My opinion is I agree 100% with Dominic because I hear the word decorum coming up a lot, and I'm looking at the definition, and it says behavior in keeping with good taste and propriety. And the Republicans do not have any decent behavior, so they do not follow decorum. That's about it for me. I'll just hang up and listen.
All right. Thanks for the call, William. 844-967-2789.
For the record, I was attacking both the decorum and the dress code of GOP.
Of Jim Jordan. Of GYM
Judiciary Jordan. Leader Jim Jordan. Yes.
Zelensky, you know, coming. He's not, you know, he came to greet the president and whatnot, you know, wearing his, you know, war garb, for crying out loud, you know, leading the country against Russian invasion and war. Also, not decorum, right? I mean, do you object to that? I'm just wondering, man, you seem to, if you're such a traditionalist, I'm just wondering, at what point did it become, this is now what we should have, and that's only what we should have? I mean, things continue to change, man. It doesn't
Matt
matter.
From Hood River, Oregon, how you doing?
It's not about, hang on, Matt, come on, man. It's not about the clothes a person wears. It's about the content of the character, man. I mean, Jesus wore sandals, Kuchka reminded me. All right, Nate, your turn. Welcome. What do you got? Nat, your turn. Welcome.
You nailed it with the wigs, man. I mean, you know, things change. No one ever says, I should have done that anymore. They all say, I should have did that. Because every language that's in use changes, and this whole thing about we got to stick to the wigs. You know, society is getting a little more casual, and if you're like where I live out in the West Woods, if someone shows up in a suit and tie, you're either going to have to pay a lot of money or you're in trouble. Something is up.
Nat, let me ask you, if you were dragged into court, would you put on a nice shirt, maybe a sport coat?
Sure, but not a sport coat. I don't even think I own one anymore. But I think,
well, Dom couldn't lend Dom's you one either, probably, Nat.
But it's just, you know, why do they have 11 guys in a platoon? Because 10 soldiers and one guy to hold the horses. You know, it's there's certain traditions that I know they're hard to let go of, but I think Crudy's going to have to let go of this one.
I got to let go of you for now, Nat. Thanks for calling, though. From Hood River, Oregon. Love our fans all over. Less so when they agree with Dom. 844-967-2789. Bill from Fond du Lac. How you doing, Bill?
Hey, Bill.
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, yeah, Bill. You. Do you own a sport coat, and would you wear it to church or maybe court?
I definitely would. I think Dom is completely wrong on this one. And Mike, I don't agree with you often, but this is about respect for the institution, no matter what your thoughts are. I mean, what's next? Feet up on the furniture? What are we doing? You know?
I mean, Bill, do you take your hat off in a restaurant?
Of course.
Bill, do you think it's okay for women to show their shoulders in Congress, or should we go back to covering the shoulders up?
It's about respect, Dom, and that's really what it comes down to. And it's obviously that you don't have that.
Oh,
well, I'm
damn,
curious, so
I think
Bill,
he's stuck it to you, Bill.
Nice way to not answer the question, Bill, because, of course, you're going to sound like a misogynist to think, oh, my God, women, they must wear skirts. They got to cover themselves up. It is about respect and not about how you dress. That is exactly the point, Bill. You can dress to the nines, man. Donald Trump's got some expensive-ass suits, man.
Really?
You think
they
that
look
guy
dumpy.
Respects anything? Well, they look kind of moo-moo on them, but, you know, you got to work with what you got. The tailor can only do so much. Thanks for the call, everyone.
Thank you for listening. Maggie Dawn, always impeccably dressed, is next. And then Empowered Caregivers.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin.
You are listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228 Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.